Hi again, everybody, and welcome to the Emrin's Podcast, episode 100. Today is Friday, July 11th, 2008. The opening anthem today is the national anthem of Mongolia, and I chose that because the annual festival called Nadam, I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce that, N-A-A-D-A-M, begins on July 11th. I think it runs through the 13th, and you may have actually seen it on one of the documentary channels. But essentially, it's a contest of Mongolian wrestling, horse racing, and archery. And it's believed to have stretched all the way back to ancient times, really. But it's held on July, it begins on July 11th to commemorate the 1921 revolution in which Mongolia declared itself an independent country. Well, today is my 100th episode, and I never thought I'd get here. To be honest, there were times when it certainly didn't seem very likely. But nevertheless, here we are. The title of today's episode, 100 Not Out, is actually a cricket reference, which is probably a bit lost on my American friends and family, but it essentially means a batter who's scored 100 runs and isn't out. I mean, fairly literally, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the game's going on. Play could be suspended, the game could be over, they could have lost any number of things. It's actually just a reference to the player himself, and it's a player who's done pretty well, because to get 100 runs isn't bad. It's often called it's usually called a century, sometimes called a ton, and it's a good thing to do, good thing to get to. And it also means that it implies that they can continue, that they're ready to go. And that's sort of where I'm at with the podcast, because I'm certainly not ending it at 100 episodes, although there was a time I thought about that, but that's a whole other issue. So anyway, that's where we are. Now, I decided against doing anything special for my 100th episode, which is why I didn't really make any special mention of it. I did mention it by number when I've been talking about the fee change and all that sort of stuff, just to make it clear what I was talking about. It really had nothing to do with episode 100 as such. And there are a lot of reasons for that. And none the least of them is that there have been some pretty spectacular 100th episodes that have been done, and other episodes as well. And I didn't feel that I could put that kind of energy into it. I didn't feel that I could approach that level of quality, I guess. And I just decided to opt out. Plus, which I had a heck of a lot going on right now, and I just didn't have the time anyway. So I've decided that I'm not going to do anything special today. I may do something on my 150th episode, my sesquicentennial. I don't know. We'll see. But there were a few things that I did play with doing. And among them were, I thought about redoing the opening completely. Obviously, I didn't do that. I thought about using the computer voice to record something funny, but of course, Eric the Southern Boy already did that in his episode 50. And none of the things that I thought of doing that I could do easily were things that I really wanted to do, to be honest. So I decided, no, I'm just going to do a normal episode, carry on as before, carry on as I have been, and then at some future time, from time to time, probably, I'll do special episodes. But this ain't one of them. Today, I just have a few things I wanted to tell you about, a few things going on. And actually, very few of them have anything to do with New Zealand, as it happens. But the first thing I wanted to tell you about was that you've probably seen in the media reports that in Australia, they are planning on, well, I don't know what the quite word would be. Let's say harassing people who wear T-shirts that may annoy Catholics or offend them, because Sydney is being inundated with Catholic youth for World Youth Day, and Pope Ratzinger is on his way to Australia as well to do whatever it is he does. And so they passed this measure to forbid anyone from wearing T-shirts that would annoy or offend the pilgrims, as they call them. I mean, how can you make a pilgrimage to Sydney? I mean, I can understand that for gay and lesbian Mardi Gras, but anyway, be that as it may. And a lot of Americans in particular were just outraged when they heard this. And I mean, and rightfully so. I think it is an outrage that they would even contemplate doing this sort of thing. But one of the things you need to understand about Australia is that this sort of thing goes on all the time. Back during APEC, which was in Sydney, and also the Sydney Olympics, there were similar draconian security measures that were done. And in the case of the Olympics, you can kind of understand, and even APEC, because all these world leaders, including Bush, were coming, so they had to take security precautions. But a lot of these free speech measures are really quite over the top. There was an incident, I think it was about a year or two ago, where a news crew for Television New Zealand was filming a story, I believe it was on prisons in New South Wales. The New South Wales police came, confiscated their videotapes and detained them. Eventually they released the videotapes. But the irony is that they were doing a favorable story, and there was no particular reason why they shouldn't have been filming. There was a public place. They actually had permission to film. They had official permits or whatever. So it shows what kind of happens, and mostly it seems to me in New South Wales, which is the state where Sydney is located. And I don't know if other states are as bad as New South Wales, but they do seem to do it rather a lot. Now, there's another controversy that's been brewing well before Pope Watch started, and that was that there was a photographer who opened an exhibition with photos of an adolescent boy and girl who were naked. And the New South Wales police raided the gallery and seized the photographs and took them away. And I don't remember if they arrested the photographer or they were going to charge him. But the Australian film review officer, whatever it's called, their censor, reviewed the photos and said they were not pornographic. And so therefore, obviously, the police couldn't pursue child pornography charges, which is what they planned on doing. And this caused quite a stir, of course. The Prime Minister of Australia, Kevin Rudd, said he found the photos revolting. I haven't seen the photos, so I can't speak from any personal experience, but the snippets they showed on television were certainly not pornographic. Whether or not they were good art or not, I don't know, that's a whole other issue. But they certainly weren't pornographic, they weren't even sexual in any manner, shape, or form. Nevertheless, there's a certain wowser element in Australia that tends to take issue with this sort of thing. Well, a magazine decided that it was going to protest this, the Australian Art Review, I believe it's called. Anyway, it's an Australian art magazine. So they put on the front cover a picture of a naked six-year-old girl, and they had other photos of her inside the magazine. And that created another stir, as you might imagine. And to the extent where the girl's father and the girl herself fronted up to the media, this is after Kevin Rudd again publicly criticized this whole thing. She said that she thought that they were great photos, and some of them were her idea, and all that kind of thing. Well, there has now been talk in Australia that they may make it illegal to portray a naked child meaning anyone under 18, I suppose, or 16 maybe, illegal to portray a naked child in any manner, shape, or form. Not just pornography, there would be no permitted artistic expression that would show a child. It would even mean that parents couldn't photograph their infants on bearskin rugs or in the bath or anything else that parents tend to do. And this kind of thing goes on in Australia all the time. It doesn't happen in New Zealand so much. I don't know why that is. I don't know why they tend to fly off the handle about free expression. The only incident that I can remember in New Zealand which was even remotely connected to suppression of freedom of expression was when the Chinese premier was visiting when the National Party was last in power. And there were a lot of protesters, particularly for freeing Tibet. And so, and also Falun Gong were also protesting, they always do. And what the Prime Minister at the time, Jenny Shipley, did is she ordered buses to be brought in and parked to block the protesters, not only their view, but also their sound from the Chinese premier, so the Chinese premier wouldn't be offended by knowing that there were protesters around. More recently, there was an incident where a reporter who actually is part of Falun Gong, apparently, was barred from a public press conference type meeting thing to which they were credentialed by the police. Now, this wasn't the government that did it, apparently. It was the police doing it on their own, which is similar in some ways to the incident recently where a 61-year-old librarian was ejected from a queue for a public town meeting for John McCain by McCain's security goons. It could very well be that it's overzealous local police doing things that at the time they think make sense, but in retrospect, were really a bad idea. But I wanted to put that whole T-shirt thing into context because although it is outrageous that they would ever think it's a good idea to try to censor T-shirts, protest T-shirts, this sort of thing happens a lot in Australia. Now, as it happens, this afternoon I was watching Sky News Australia, and they have a World Youth Day correspondent whose sole job, apparently, is to report on this whole World Youth Day thing. And she came back with some of the merchandise that's being sold. One of them is a rugby jersey that says Benedetto 16 on the back. Another is a baseball cap that says the same thing. And another is a bracelet that has these little things they call widgets, which are these little interchangeable charms, essentially, that the youth attending the conference can purchase. The widgets come in bags of three for $10 Australian each, you might want to know. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, they don't allow protest T-shirts, because those might be offensive, but they're perfectly happy to sell gewgaws and knickknacks and things to promote Pope Fest, as I call it. And I personally find that offensive. But anyway, the whole thing is really absurd. Here in New Zealand, people are like, eh, whatever. It's not getting any coverage to speak of. It will when the Pope gets there, of course, because all this chaos. There was a threatened rail strike up until just the other day. The train operators were threatening to go on strike while the pilgrims are trying to move around, which would have created utter chaos, because something like 250,000 people who were going to be trying to get around, especially to the open-air mass and things like that. But I don't know. It's it's a far bigger deal in Australia than it is anywhere else. But also in Australia, the CSIRO, which is the Commonwealth Scientific Industrial Research Organization, it's certainly the leading research institution in Australasia, and it's certainly a very big deal in Australia as well. Specifically, issued a report that predicted that petrol will reach $8 Australian a liter within a decade. And to give some perspective, at the moment, that would translate to $29 US per gallon, or 10 New Zealand dollars per liter. And this is, of course, within a decade, they're saying. Now, what they're predicting is that in about 5 years, the supply of oil will start to decline. They're talking about peak oil, essentially. Unfortunately, nobody really knows when that is or was, because it may have already passed. It will inevitably happen, and inevitably the world will run out of oil. It's not clear exactly when that point is or was. But it just struck me as fascinating. They were predicting $8 Australian a liter in 10 years. At the moment, and as I said, that would be 10 New Zealand dollars. At the moment, New Zealanders are paying about $2.18 per liter. So it's, in the overall scheme of things, it's not that big a stretch to imagine paying $10 a liter. It could certainly happen. I don't know. I don't know if Americans are prepared to paying $30 a gallon, although, of course, they would be paying substantially less, because they always have. Now, back to my favorite subject, me. You will, of course, recall that about 4 weeks ago, I had a gout attack that lasted and lasted and lasted. And technically, it's still going on, although it's much improved. But here's the thing. On Tuesday, which was actually 4 weeks to the day from when it all started, I was having a pain, and as I've been having off and on, and I was really kind of getting quite exasperated about it. But a few days ago, I spoke with Nigel's mom on the phone, and she was telling me about this article she read that if people have 3 cherries a day, that they won't have another gout attack. And of course, cherries are one of the things that are supposed to be especially effective in preventing gout attacks, because it prevents the accumulation of the crystals and blah, 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 blah. I don't want to get into all the details, but basically it's a good thing. And she also told me that something about cherry juice and water, but when she started talking about cherry juice, my mind switched off, because I'm thinking to myself, where the hell am I going to get cherry juice? But anyway, so Tuesday I had this pain, and I had to go to the grocery store. So I was at the grocery store and I saw cherries. So I thought, oh, what the hell? So I bought them. They were about $25 a kilo, and because they're out of season. They're American cherries, actually. So they're probably loaded with pesticides and all sorts of things. Anyway, they were $25 a kilo, which today works out to about $8.40 US per pound, or about $19.37 Australian per kilo. So they were quite expensive. But the thing of it is that even when they're in season, when we have New Zealand cherries in season, they're not necessarily that much cheaper. Cherries are very expensive for some reason. So I bought, I didn't buy a whole lot of cherries. I think I bought maybe 200 or 300 grams, not very much, and brought them home. And I had 3 cherries that afternoon, and whatever. And that, I continued having this bit of a pain through the evening, took a couple of ibuprofen, went to bed. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, as I often do, and I felt nothing, no pain, nothing. I thought, that's unusual. I got up the next day, and I was basically able to walk fairly normally. Still a little bit of stiffness in the joint, as I would expect, but definitely improved. So I had another 3 cherries. And then today, I got up, and it's better still. So naturally, I had my three cherries. And the thing of it is that I always thought this whole cherry thing was a bit of an old wives' tale, but I decided to give it a go anyway, I suppose because I'm getting a bit desperate. And I was pleasantly surprised to find that it actually does work. They also say that dark red berries like boysenberries and blackberries and so on are quite good for it as well. And I've been forcing myself actually to have toast with boysenberry jam on it every morning. I say forcing myself because I'm not a breakfast person, and it's really hard work for me to eat anything before like 9:30 or 10 o'clock. So I do it anyway. And I think this whole thing cumulatively is helping. But I think now I'm going to go out of my way to make sure that I have my three cherries a day and see what if it works in the long run. Because the reason I don't want to go on medication, and I have mentioned this in the past, I think, is that once you're on it for life. And if you ever go off it, you have the most severe gout attack imaginable. And actually, you can't imagine it, apparently. It's so terrible. So I don't want to go down that road. If I can avoid the medication, I will at all costs, short of having constant attacks, obviously. But I just thought it was kind of interesting when an old wives' tale turns out to be true, because they do every once in a while, you know. Well, next it's time for comments, but before I go into the comments, I have a couple of phone messages, and I'm going to play them now.
Hey, Arthur, this is Bramble. Just wanted to give you a quick call to wish you congratulations on your upcoming 100th episode. I think it's amazing. You have done such a great job, and I really have enjoyed your program as well as I enjoy your friendship immensely. So I just wanted to make sure that I got the message in and just want to let you know. So congratulations, and here's to 100 more. Bye-bye.
Well, thanks for that, Tom. Tom, of course, is the host of the Bramble Redhead Show, which I've been listening to for a very long time now, and you can find that at brambleredhead.com. He's also the only podcaster I've ever met in real life. I've obviously talked to some over Skype and so on, but he's the only one I've actually met, at least so far. But I certainly value his friendship, and he's always been very supportive to me over ever since I've started. So thanks again, Tom. And now here's the next message.
Hey, Arthur, it's Tim Formal calling, and I was just calling to wish you congratulations on your 100th episode of The Emerins. So, hey, fantastic, and I hope you're doing well. One of these days, now we are going to get over to the New Zealand to see you, but unfortunately, probably not until I can talk to husband into making a 20-hour flight. So, one of these days soon. Anyway, we will talk to you soon. Take care, and again, congratulations on 100 episodes.
Well, thanks for that, Tim. I actually think that at the time that he left the recording that he and his hubby were on their way to their vacation in Palm Springs and meeting other podcasters. They were supposed to be coming to New Zealand, of course. No, I'm just kidding. But thanks a lot for that, Tim. Tim has been very helpful as well, especially with technical stuff. He was the one who suggested moving my hosting to GoDaddy, and he also provided some guidance when I didn't quite know what I was doing and trying to get it all set up. So I certainly greatly appreciate that, and I understand he's done that for quite a lot of other podcasters as well. His podcasts are Go Rainbow Radio, and also there are some who call me Tim. And there are links for both of those at amarinspodcast.com. He also has a new podcast called Meat Free Radio, which I actually don't have a link to just yet. It's with Mikey Pod and Eric the Southern Boy. Yeah, that's right. Stop and think. I've only listened to the first episode so far, but I actually found it really interesting. And interesting and also related to this whole gout thing. Gout is virtually unknown among vegetarians, unless they have kidney disease for genetic or whatever. And so it occurred to me that it might be a good idea to be more vegetarian. I don't think I could ever be fully vegetarian, certainly not vegan. But I thought, well, it's worth a try. And after I heard that episode as well, the first episode, I thought I would just sort of give it a go for 24 hours to see how hard it really is. And I wasn't trying to become vegetarian or anything. I just wanted to see kind of for myself what vegetarians have to go through. Well, we were away at a family thing in another town the first night. And on the menu, there actually was a vegetarian option. It was a vegetarian risotto, which was also gluten-free, apparently. And, I suppose rice would be. But the thing is, it was mixed with vegetables. Now, I thought the vegetables were chopped too small just between us. But it tasted suspiciously like it had chicken stock in it. However, I do know that there is a vegan chicken stock, powdered chicken stock that is available that tastes amazingly like real chicken stock. I mean, you know, from chickens. But it's not. There's no animal products in it whatsoever. So it could have been that. I don't know. So I got through that. It wasn't the best thing I've ever had, but it was all right. Well, the next day, we went out to lunch with Nigel's sister. Nigel and I went out to lunch with his sister, and we went to a cafe that just changed owners. And I had a, what the heck was it? It was a cheese-stuffed ravioli, I think it was, in a cream sauce or cheese sauce. I can't remember now because it's actually been a few weeks ago, to be honest. But that was quite good. But it was the only, strictly speaking, the only vegetarian thing on the menu. There were a few other things that were nearly vegetarian, or actually, I think there was a linguine or something that I could have had if I could eat mushrooms because it was in a mushroom sauce. But of course, people with gout can't eat mushrooms. However, that cafe did have a lot of items on the menu that were gluten-free, which is becoming really quite a big deal here in New Zealand now. And I was really quite interested in seeing that. Now, last weekend, actually, Nigel and I went to the gluten-free and allergy food show. And I actually felt a bit like Chef Mark at this thing because there are all of these food vendors and you could sample their wares and talk to people about their products and so on. So it was really quite interesting. The only downside, I suppose, was that there were a lot of parents pushing around the children in pushchairs, and the aisles were really quite narrow, so it was sometimes difficult to get through. But no, it was a good thing. Now, actually, that got way off the subject of comments, but be that as it may, actually, the first written comment is from Chef Mark, and this is, of course, for the previous episode, which was episode 99, Just Me. And he says, "Arthur, my dear, you know how much I love you, but you used to be so proud of not talking about or whoring for iTunes reviews. What happened? I know your ego. You said it a bunch of times in this episode. It's fine to talk about once in a while, but you spend about half of the episode talking about it. I have a suggestion. Make the Tuesday shows all about iTunes reviews, and don't say anything at all about it on the Friday shows. Then those of us who don't want to hear about iTunes can just skip those shows. You know I love you despite your huge ego." And I said, "Fret not. The ego has been put back into its storage box. It's not of much use to me here in New Zealand anyway." And that's true, but I'll come back to that in a second. The next comment was Archer, who said, "Work that ego." And I said, "Clearly I did. In fact, I exhausted it. It's all used up now. It's all used up, for now, anyway." And I actually am not going to talk about iTunes reviews anymore. I've said all I wanted to say. There are 13 reviews now. Thank you, everyone. But I probably will, from time to time, thank people for the reviews. But apart from that, I'm not going to be mentioning it anymore. There's really nothing more to say anyway, is there? I'm going to be concentrating now exclusively on content for future episodes and also on finding new listeners. None of which has anything to do with iTunes, necessarily. So you can all relax. I also received an email after the last episode, and I'm not going to say any names or anything because I actually didn't get permission to do that. But it's from a New Zealander who now lives in the U.S. And let's see, what else should I say? Well, here's what it says. It says, "If I only had your podcast for training purposes early on in our marriage, it would have made the transition simpler for both of us. For instance, if I say, 'not a problem,' when you say, 'thank you,' it doesn't mean it was a problem to begin with." And that is so true, because so many Kiwis just say, "not a problem," or "no worries," or something like that when somebody says, "thank you." And Americans go, "what?" Next. It's highly likely that I will want to experience everything that you consider bad about your country so that I can catch up on 30 years of subliminal pop culture, or at least so I can get all of the jokes on TV. And that is so true as well, because a lot of the things that Americans go, "oh my God," are things that here in New Zealand that have either been on television or that have been sort of floating around the ether. Sometimes it's referenced in another TV show or movie or what have you. And typically when New Zealanders go to the U.S. as tourists, what they want to do is they want to see everything they've heard about in songs and in movies. Like when we were in New York City, Nigel and I were both saying how no matter where you go, there was something from a song lyric or a scene from a movie or a TV show or whatever. It just, you couldn't get away from it. Well, it's kind of like that for Kiwi tourists in the U.S. as well. They go there and they just notice all of these bits and pieces. But going on, it says, other countries do, in fact, have freedom in the same quantities as you do. And of course, that's something that I've talked about frequently here on the podcast, and also on posts and various blogs that I've left, comments that I've left on blogs, because there is a presumption among a lot of Americans that they're the only place in the world that has freedom. And that's simply not true. And in some countries are more free than the U.S. in some ways. What the U.S. does have that a lot of countries don't have is a written constitution. And that has strengths and weaknesses. And that's a topic for another day. But the point basically is still the same, that America is not the only country in the world that is free. It just other countries are different and do things differently. That doesn't make them bad or worse. It makes them different. Anyway, it says, I never graduated from high school. New Zealanders don't graduate from secondary education. It's sometimes called high school, sometimes called college. They just complete their studies. Now, nowadays, the system is that you end school with, I can't even remember what it's called. They changed the system recently. But at any rate, there's no formal ceremony to speak of. You don't march across the stage in a gown and cap and all that to get a diploma. It doesn't happen. You end up getting essentially it's almost like a statement from the, I believe it's the Ministry of Education. I could be wrong about that. Anyway, it says everything you've done, lists all your qualifications. Oh, no, I think it's the New Zealand Qualifications Authority. But I think that's where it comes from. Anyway, it lists everything that you've done, and employers get that too so that they can see what you've studied, what you were good at, what you weren't so good at. And it's sort of like getting a transcript in a way. It's a completely different system than exists in America. It's meant to be merit-based, where people can play to their strengths, essentially, and you can tell future employers can tell what those strengths were. But the idea of a graduation ceremony or graduation moment is really pretty alien to New Zealanders because it just doesn't exist. It says, my bachelor's degree is not the same as an AA degree plus one. I'm not entirely sure what that means, except that there is a perception among some Americans that bachelor's degrees from New Zealand or other countries aren't as good as American ones, and that's obviously nonsense, because there are obviously some in America that aren't very good, let's be honest. What happens in New Zealand is that a student goes through their secondary schooling until about 17, roughly, and then they go on to university and start their schooling there. And how long that takes, obviously, is just like in America. It depends on how much they're working, whether they can go full-time or part-time or what have you. But it's generally around 3 or 4 years. So generally by 20, they're done with their schooling. Even if they go to what we call tech, which is sort of like a trade school, they leave their secondary education, their high school, with pretty much the equivalent of what Americans would call an associate's degree in terms of the amount of schooling that they've had, but they'd stop earlier. And many high school students go on to work after that, and some don't actually go all the way through their secondary school. They'll stop earlier and start working. Because let's face it, not everybody's cut out for school. But the current government has talked about requiring students to stay in school later. And there's a lot of people, me included, who don't necessarily think that's such a great idea. And it says, no, we did not have Mr. Rogers, and I don't understand why. If he was so popular, why don't more younger people enjoy jazz? That's a good point, actually, because the Mr. Rogers neighborhood always had a lot of jazz in it, didn't it? Anyway, thank you for that email, and thanks for the written comments and for the phone messages. I do appreciate it. Feel free to leave a comment at any time at my site, which is amrinspodcast.com. Or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. And, of course, you can send an email to me at arthur@amrinspodcast.com. That's it for this week, everybody. Have a great weekend, and I'll see you for the next 100 episodes. I hope. Bye.